Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Everything beautiful happens at night. Everything beautiful happens after the day is through.
This is Soundcheck on WNYC. I'm Siddhartha Mitter, filling in for John Schaefer. Still to come on the show, the story of imaginary soul superstar Lingering Mike. But first, there's a big reason why theatergoers are pouring in to see 110 in the Shade, the 1963 musical that's playing in revival at the Roundabout Theater. That reason is Audra McDonald. She's the lead actress who's a four-time Tony Award winner and has been nominated for a fifth Tony for this role. Audra is not only a familiar face on Broadway, her extremely diverse career has taken her from concert halls to television and even to the opera stage. And I'm pleased to welcome Audra to Soundcheck. Audra McDonald, welcome.
Thank you, Siddhartha.
So 110 in the Shade, it had a nice run, I guess, on Broadway in 1963, but it wasn't really a big hit. And on the surface, it can seem a little bit dated now.
Yeah.
It's the story of a father and two brothers who are trying to get their sister, who's sort of a plain Jane homemaker called Lizzie Curry. They're trying to get her a husband. Why would you take this role on?
Well, I think in describing it that way, that's actually can be somewhat of an incorrect way of actually sort of describing the piece. The piece is actually, I think, about a woman named Lizzie Curry who is a homemaker, who is sort of mother, sister, and wife all rolled up into one for her father and two brothers, because there is no mom in the household. And she is not the most attractive woman in the world, and is someone who very much speaks her mind and has grown up very much in a male world, and is someone who is desperately lonely and wants more than anything to find love. It's not so much that her family's trying to marry her off, it's that she's desperate to find love. If Lizzie's too strong of a person, if she didn't want to be married, she wouldn't be. She wants to.
And it's set in this piece of really sort of romanticized Americana, isn't it?
Yes, it takes place during the Dust Bowl era in the 30s, and I think, which is very interesting, because, you know, you can see sort of the battles, you know, the battle with the elements, you know, the everybody just wants it to rain. They're so desperate for, you know, relief from the heat. And, you know, and so the metaphor between the relief from the heat and, you know, for Lizzie's, you know, feeling like she's drying up and she will never, ever experience love, and for this con man to come in and bring love into her heart, ends up bringing rain to the land.
That's right. That's right. So the chief theater critic of the New York Times, Ben Brantley, wrote this very, very glowing review in which he did say 110 Degrees in the Shade remains family entertainment only for families without feminists. Do you see this as in any way an anti-feminist role or play?
No, I don't at all, because it's sometimes people make the mistake, you know, when Showboat is revived, no one says, well, my goodness, they've got slaves in there. What's wrong with these people? It was of the time. And this is a revival of a show that was written in 1963 about people in the 1930s. And in the 1930s, getting married was very much something that women did in that time. And more so than that, I think it's this one woman's particular journey that, you know, so for me, I don't see it as you know, I consider myself to be a feminist, and I'm very much, I live in the left, and in terms of all that. So I am not offended by anything that happens in this world, but maybe it's because I also love the character so much and I understand her journey.
So poor Lizzie, she's presented as plain, and mm-hmm. she wrestles with herself. She thinks of herself as plain, and it's being reinforced by various people around her. I have to ask you, was it hard to de-glamorize yourself and to tap into this this naivete, shall we say?
Not at all. It's so funny when people say, oh, well, they make her up to look plain. And in the actual truth, I don't wear makeup. And that in and of itself makes me look plenty plain. But the thing is, it's not just that she's not the prettiest girl in the world. It's that she's someone who does not have a filter. She says what she's thinking, and she always speaks the truth, and she says it no matter whether the time is right or not. And so she ends up offending a lot of people. She's not the most likable person in the beginning. And so there, it has to do with the struggle, you know, on the inside of her not feeling beautiful and her not feeling like what she has to offer is good enough. I think that is what it is, more so than she just doesn't have the looks.
Well, let's hear a little bit of her expressing herself in the play. This is from Act 1 of 110 in the Shade. The song is Love, Don't Turn Away.
I have so many things I want to do for you,
I have so many things saved up to say. I have so many longings that belong to you. So long, don't turn away. I have so many songs I want to sing to you. I have so many smiles that I could cry. I have so many kisses I could bring to you. So long, don't pass me by. I can't offer you lots.
That's Audra McDonald singing Love, Don't Turn Away from the play 110 in the Shade. Audra is with us on Soundcheck on WNYC, and I'm Siddhartha Mitter filling in for John Schaefer. Audra, the cast recording of 110 in the Shade is out today, as it happens, and I know that it's dedicated to your father, who passed away unexpectedly last month, and we're all very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Did having the show help you get through it?
Yeah, you know, it was 5 weeks ago last Sunday, and the show really helps in that it gives me something to focus on. And also working through a lot of the father-daughter relationships within the show, it's actually a way for me to really honor him. So I'm thankful that I have it. You know, when you're dealing with a shocking tragedy like that and such a sudden and unexpected death, it's always good to have something to sort of wrap your mind around. Otherwise, you think you go a little cuckoo.
Well, the father-daughter relationship in the show that you just mentioned is really, really fundamental, and the two of you played incredibly well. Can you tell us a little bit about it, and how did you draw on your own personal experience in inhabiting the part?
Well, I tell you, working with John Cullum, who is, you know, just a legend of the stage and screen, he's done everything, and he's seen everything, and so there's just an immediate comfort level with him, and he's also someone who is just willing to go wherever you want to go in terms of a scene. If you want to play it one way one night, he's there to hit the ball back. If you want to play it another way, he's right there. Sometimes he'll throw a curveball, which is fantastic, and that keeps it alive. But Lizzie only has her father. That's her confidant. That's everything. That's her mom. That's her dad. That's her confidant. That's her best friend. It's the only person who she feels truly understands her and loves her and thinks she's beautiful is her dad. So he bears a lot of responsibility for everything that he must be to her, and all he wants is for her to be happy, you know, and he knows that for her to be happy, that is to find a mate. And so they take care of each other, I think, in a very sweet way. You know, actually at a point in the show when she's really about ready to just sort of fall apart, instead of saying, oh, honey, life is going to get better, he says, oh, you want to be like all those other girls? And then he sort of makes her sort of steel herself. And out of it comes this great number of raunchy where she starts making fun of all these sort of like silly little girls that she doesn't want to be like, which I think is a wonderful thing. And, you know, it just speaks to their strength.
I think you mentioned raunchy. It's a faux burlesque number.
Yeah.
And why don't you set it up a little bit? Can we get a sense of the staging?
Sure. What's happening is, you know, as I've just said, she's really feeling down about herself and feeling like she asks, do I have to be a woman? Do I need to get lessons in order to be a woman? Am I a woman? And, you know, he says, you want to go down and be Lillian Beasley? And she says, well, you know, those little girls at the social club, they know how to get along. And then he says, fine, go be one of them. And she says, fine. Mm-hmm. And so she starts to make up how she would be one of those little silly girls down at the social club.
Let's hear a little bit of what she does. This is raunchy from 110 in the Shade.
Well, you just watch. I'll be so raunchy, dancing in my pink and green settee, feeling like a queen, wearing Maybelline. I'll be so raunchy, gonna make them other gals turn green, honky-tonking every night. I'm a raunchy kind of gal. I'll be so raunchy, sipping Dr. Pepper mixed with booze, burning like a fuse, shaking like a boots. I'll be so raunchy, stepping in my patent leather shoes. When the cowboys see me strut my stuff, gonna crawl right on there. I'll
ranches, 'cause they just can't seem to get enough. I'm a ranchy kind of gal.
And that's raunchy Audra McDonald singing from 110 in
that's
the Shade.
That's a raunchy Audra McDonald.
And it's a great number, and I can only encourage people to go and see the play to get it in its full.
Yeah, we're actually going to perform that number on the Tonys, so people can tune in on Sunday night and watch.
In its full force. That's great. Now, one of the really refreshing things about the performance is the interracial or race-blind character of it. So sort of at the risk of taking away that refreshingness to it, let's talk about that for a second. Does it in fact make a difference what the race of any of these characters is?
I think not necessarily. If you're willing to, suspend disbelief when you walk into the theater, anyway, not necessarily, because this isn't a show about one particular historical event. This is, this is about, sort of familial issues, universal issues, issues with being a woman, feeling like a woman, being alone. These are all universal issues that human beings deal with, So, I think what we've been able to do is just sort of create the family, we have John Cullum, who is of course Caucasian. I'm African American. One of my brothers is African American. He's actually biracial, and another one is Caucasian. But it doesn't matter. I mean, we have really developed a family unit, and I think that's what's most important, And when you just sort of throw that out the door the minute you walk in, I think it allows the audience just to come in. And I tell you, people have come up to me and said they've had more problems with thinking I'm not quote-unquote pretty enough, which, whatever. But that's more supposedly their problem than the African-American issue. So,
well, and I have to say, in one of the pieces of coverage of the show, there was a discussion of, well, technically, you could say maybe their mother, who's not present, was African-American, and that would explain why the family looks like it is. But in fact, if you see the show, it really doesn't matter.
I think it goes away. I think you're not thinking about that,
And the New Yorker, a review in the New Yorker, kind of drew an interesting contrast between this and the atmosphere that prevails, say, in Hollywood. It says, if movies were as colorblind as they should be, McDonald could be her generation's Meryl Streep. How different does that color issue play in Hollywood versus Broadway, versus opera, all these different pieces of performance that you're involved in?
Well, I think, Hollywood is a different beast, and I think, they're dealing with so much more money and so many more sort of cooks in the kitchen. A lot of their money comes from advertisers and whatnot. I think it's just not nearly as open-minded, when you're trying to play to a broader base, whereas opera is so far ahead of everything, where it's always been about, look, if you can sing it, if you've got that high C, fine, you can play this role. We don't care that you're, Caucasian playing, an Ethiopian princess. That's fine, because you've got the high C, so whatever, I think Broadway is somewhere in the middle. I think certainly we've seen a lot of changes in the past 15 to 20 years, and I think people's eyes are opening even more and more in that respect to just, if it is not necessarily a historical thing that you're dealing with, then yes, let's just cast whoever's right for the role. I mean, if you're doing Porgy and Bess, if you're doing Showboat, things like that, of course, Raisin in the Sun. Okay, that's about an African-American experience.
You can't get away from it.
No. But I think there are cases when you can.
Well, you were mentioning opera and technique. The high C's are important in opera, it's fairly unusual, the extreme range of different performance stages that you've put yourself on. Last year, you made your debut at the Houston Grand Opera, and in February, you made your debut at the Los Angeles Opera.
Playing a big old whore in Mahagoni.
In Kurt Weill's The Rise and Fall of the City of Mahagoni.
Yes.
Tell me about the difference. Is it shorter runs? Is it different vocal emphasis?
Yes. When we finished I did a Rise and Fall of the City of Mahagoni in Los Angeles with Patti LuPone. She and I both, obviously come from the Broadway world, and we realized that by the time we got to our final performance, which was we did 7 performances over a course of a month, that would have equaled not even 1 week of previews on Broadway, which was amazing to us. And it is definitely, it's first and foremost about the voice, and sacrificing any sort of vocal technique or purity of tone for dramatic influence, let's say, is not always, thought to be the best thing, whereas in Broadway, that's not so important. There's the issue of amplification. We had a little bit of amplification with, we use some microphones, although you're not really supposed to. That's, the ivory tower sort of thought that you're not really supposed to use amplification with opera. And I think it may attract slightly a different audience. You know, the one thing that was interesting, I think, is because Patti LuPone and I were involved with it, I think people who would not normally have come to the opera did come because they were curious as to what we called it Broadway trash doing in the opera world.
Is there a way that sort of every performance counts, the stakes are higher in each performance?
It felt that way, and it felt like we never got a chance to sort of settle in and get comfortable with it because the performances were so spaced out. But I understand why they're so spaced out, because vocally the demands tend to be a little more strenuous, you know, because the emphasis is so much on the purity of the tone and of the voice.
So you have a different kind of fatigue when you come out of the performance?
In a way, yes. I would say so.
Well, another form that you're involved in, you've worked frequently with a whole new generation of musical theater and art song mm-hmm. composers. Mm-hmm. And we're going to hear a clip. This is a song by one of them, Adam Gettel. And this is the title track from your last album, Build a Bridge.
Yes, I need you. And I love you. Waters wide. Oh yes, I am trying to get there. To battle the tide, build a bridge, come to shore, build a this I've heard before. I'll be coming. I am trying.
That's Audra McDonald singing Build a Bridge, the title track from her album Build a Bridge. The song is by Adam Gettel. You do Broadway, you do concerts, you do television. Your husband is also a performing artist. I believe he's a bassist, right?
He's a bassist, yes. We met at school at Juilliard, yeah.
And he's currently in the pit for Mary Poppins.
He's in the pit, Mary Poppins, and he's on the road with Barbara Cook.
So there's this question about how do you balance, you know, motherhood with your daughter. But
yes.
It's the same question for him, really, isn't it? How does he balance fatherhood?
Yeah, it's very difficult. It's a give and take. And because we're in a business that's not consistent, you know, I mean, we just take it one day at a time is really the way you have to do it, you know. We do like the fact that she's growing up so, you know, influenced by music and also so a part of the theater. She knows her way around a theater. She knows her way around a tech. And I love that. I have always wanted that. I mean, I still want her to grow up and be a doctor or something else, but
really?
I want her to have a real healthy appreciation for the performing arts. And I know she'll at least have that.
So the two of you together are finding ways does she become a factor in your career choices, in your performance and acting choices?
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, especially the older she gets. And, you know, the one thing I've always loved about being a performer is we don't keep the same hours as other people do, you know, in the sense that when everybody's leaving the city at night, we're just going into the city, or, you know, we have Mondays off, you mm-hmm. know, and I've always enjoyed that. But now that we have a kid who's, you know, in kindergarten, now going to first grade, we don't have that freedom anymore. We're sort of being relegated to being a part of, you know, most of the working world where, you know, you get your summers off and you have to get up at the crack of dawn to get the kid to school and all that stuff. And so that's a big adjustment for us.
Well, you've been an original cast now of 7 Broadway productions. You've been nominated for Tonys for 6 of these productions. Do you feel the pressure to keep the track record going?
No, I don't. You know, motherhood changed everything. You know, for me now, it's really just about trying to grow as an artist and do good work. That's most important to me. You know, if the accolades come, I'm going to be thankful and grateful and honored, but you really have no control over that, I feel.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens on Sunday night. The Tony Awards are Sunday night. You can watch and root for Audra McDonald. The play, 110 in the Shade, is running through July 15th at the Roundabout.
The 29th, actually, now. We're through July 29th. We've
extended again,
yes,
to July 29th at the Roundabout Theater. We'll wrap up. This is another track from Build a Bridge. This is a song, Wonderful You. And Audra McDonald, thank you so much for coming out to Soundcheck.
Thank you. Good time.
When a criminal investigator and part-time DJ stumbled across hand-painted LP sleeves containing quote-unquote records made of cardboard, he knew he had to track down the artist. Up next on Soundcheck, the story of imaginary soul superstar Mingering Mike.
You're under public investigation and you're everybody's private fascination. You are wonderful.
else is gonna do? I am sad or wonderful. You, you always say that life is good, but I know you keep the little hurts inside.